Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking, alongside Mr. Mike Kaufman, and of course, this is Breaking Murphy's Law every first Monday and Tuesday from 2 to 3. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. How about you, David?
I am excellent because I'm very excited. You have a great guest today, and your show is excellent anyway. You know, two times a month, first Monday and first Tuesday, 2 to 3, about breaking Murphy's Law, because so many people sort of succumb to Murphy's Law and they accept it as reality in their life. And once you accept a perception as reality, guess what? You're stuck with it until you change it.
That is correct. Huh?
So why don't you describe a little bit about your show, Breaking Murphy's Law, and then we'll get right on to your great guest.
Okay, well, we all know what's Murphy's Law. What can go wrong will go wrong. Well, the point of our show, Breaking Murphy's Law, is to help you to minimize the impact of Murphy's Law in your lives and businesses. We want you to defeat Murphy's Law before Murphy's Law defeats you. We want to help you break Murphy's Law before Murphy's Law breaks you. We want to give people advice, inspiration, and tools that will help them in their life and business. Really, we want to help you and give you ideas that will help you to achieve your own personal potential.
I love that.
Wow.
Because that's what we all should be striving for, is our personal potential, our full potential. And your guest today knows all about that, wrote a great book, The Four Disciplines of Execution. Why don't you introduce your guest?
Yes, I'd like to introduce our guest, Mr. Chris McChesney.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Hi, Mike. Hi, Dave. Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining us. You know, Breakthrough Thinking is all about the mindset, about improvement, and so is your book. Some great ideas, and I'll give it back to Mike because he saw you in action, I think, speaking, about a month ago, Mike?
A little bit over that. Yeah, Chris, I was there at the Service Master Convention when you gave your presentation on the four disciplines of execution, which I believe you also call 40X, and I thought it was very engaging and very compelling.
Oh, well, I'm delighted that you had a chance to attend and that you found it valuable.
Yes, I did. You know, and, Chris is one of the co-authors of this book. And one of the things that struck me is, you know, when I've been talking on my radio show, I talk about, we want to neutralize the impact of Murphy's Law in people's life. And we talk about winning. And I've decided that the motto of myself and my company is winning is fun. And in a way, that can kind of conflict between, you know, what we hear about winning, because winning takes discipline. It takes changing behaviors, and very often that means facing discomfort and pain whenever you're about to face something new and try to transform your life. It also means giving your best. And I was just wondering, you know, and then when I heard you speak and I heard you talk about this whole 4DX process, it sounded like there was a way of injecting some fun into something that can help an organization be successful.
Yeah, that for us is what we call the happy accident. We did not set out with that in mind. A little over a decade ago, we started working on, you know, what we considered to be fundamental principles of why some teams and some organizations execute. And we'd create a hypothesis, and we'd work the hypothesis to death, and then we'd modify it, we'd work it some more. And about our fourth year into the process, we started recognizing that at some point, when these disciplines are applied, lo and behold, it feels like a game. It's like, I'll say it this way: if it doesn't feel like a game, you didn't do it right. And yet, it was never our purpose in the beginning. But you know, without being aware of it, discipline one was all about creating finish lines, and discipline two was all about the key bet for what was going to work, and discipline three was about scoreboarding it in a way that you could tell whether you were winning or losing, and discipline four was about a cadence of accountability. And so even though we had our sort of a business mindset on, And what we found were the teams that had the significant breakthroughs started treating it very much like a game. And you can't do well in a game if there isn't some element of fun associated with it.
Hmm. Okay. Wow. Did you want to – I saw a look on your face, Dave. Was there something coming to your mind there?
I like that because I think inherent in treating something as a game that, it, you know, don't take it too serious, but take it serious enough to make a difference in the world.
Yeah, and we found that there was a difference between high-stakes games and low-stakes games. And that part of the trick was to amp up the seriousness of the game. And you might that might sound like a little bit of an oxymoron, but it sort of works. It's why people are so much more involved and invested in a playoff game than they are in a preseason game. One's got consequences, the other one doesn't.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You're talking Dave's language. He has several sports shows.
I do.
He got his ears prickling up here.
You do indeed. I love that, the consequences. And so are you saying then perhaps that maybe companies have to communicate those consequences to their people, or if the top management doesn't even understand the consequences, then they should be aware of them?
Yes, and the way that we've approached these steps is that you don't go after a game unless it is a high-stakes game. Mm-hmm. So the way we look at it, there's this whirlwind that's a close cousin to our friend Murphy, right? So the whirlwind is everything that's happening every single day that has to be done in order to keep the operation going. And Murphy is very at home in the whirlwind. Mm-hmm. Right? The law of entropy is very at home in the whirlwind. Entropy is the first cousin to Murphy, right? Things are always unwinding. Things are always breaking. And it's an enormous amount of energy that's required to keep Murphy at bay in the whirlwind. And what we tell people is, look, that's a reality. It's never going to go away. But here's what you have to do. You have to pull something out of this whirlwind of activity and treat it differently. It gets a special treatment. And we call this thing that we pull out a wildly important goal or a WIG. And the four disciplines are wrapped around this wildly important goal. And that's, you know, it's defined. It's you figure out lead indicators and you track them. You put it in the form of a visible scoreboard. And every week you attack it with very specific commitments. You build a whole team. It doesn't work as well individually. If you're just an individual, you get a life coach, right? You do mm-hmm. this with someone. Mm-hmm. But it's meant to have accountability in it, too. And then quite by accident, we started realizing, hey, when people do this well, it starts to feel like a game. Not at first, but as soon as you start winning, it requires a whole bunch of upfront discipline to even get the game working. But once the game starts working, that's when you feel like you're going downhill instead of pushing the rock uphill.
Chris, you know, I'm really interested in what you said. Go after only high stakes type of activities, and that ties in, I believe, to your wildly important goals. So, what advice would you give? Let's see, you know, small, mid-sized business, for example, starting off, or even existing, and if their goals are so low. That really wouldn't create the type of consequence that this whole concept goes after, right?
Exactly. And if you think, and we've done, by the way, we've done this in hundreds of small and mid-sized companies, and even the execution practice itself within Franklin Covey is a small business. So we're very at home in that environment. One of the things you see happen when a small organization tries to prioritize is this dynamic that's similar to crabs in a basket, where one priority almost succeeds mm-hmm. and the other ones reach down and pull it back into the basket, right? And the other thing that you sometimes see is this values battle that takes place, where members of a small leadership team will start arguing over what's most important. And one person will say, it's top-line sales. We're nowhere if we don't get top-line sales. Somebody else will say, with our quality being as bad as it is, nothing's going to improve. Right. And we can't forget about safety. And what about our expenses? Our expenses are out of control. And so there's this, you know, there's eight different candidates to be the most important thing. And we sort of call time out. And when we facilitate these sessions, we stop. We're always in a position where we're stopping the group and we're saying, hey, Here's the question. We changed the question just a little bit. Instead of asking what's most important to go after as your wildly important goal, we say, look, what's the one thing that if you assume that everything else held steady? See, nobody wants to bet on any one thing because they're afraid everything else is going to go backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So you start by saying, assume everything holds. What's the one thing, if significantly improved, would have the greatest impact on the organization? And that's a slightly different question. And usually it's just enough to get an organization to say, we have got to stop turning over clients. Or we have got a cash flow problem. Or we've got an inventory turn problem. Or it'll get them to zero in on the one thing so they don't feel like they have to attack everything with the same degree of intensity.
Wow, and if they pick the right one thing, it probably has a spillover effect on some of the other ones also. Has that been your experience?
Yeah, more than you know, inevitably, and sometimes in ways you can't even predict. But the psychology to just really double down, it doesn't mean you're ignoring everything else. You're going to hold everything else, sustain everything else. It just means you're going to optimize one piece of the equation. The trap is when leaders try and optimize all the pieces at once. That's when they paralyze themselves.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that is excellent. You know, and also inherent in the title of the book, The Four Disciplines of Execution, is interesting to me. I'm also a CPA, and I do what's called neurolinguistic programming. Have you heard of that before?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I really enjoy that. I integrate it into the business world, and it's very effective, you know, having to do with the mindset. But what's interesting, and I find this in a lot of my clients, is that most or even non-clients, really, a lot of them do not plan. And when they do plan strategically, it's not very effective. But the one thing I notice is that even if you plan, there's usually no execution out there in so many small or mid-sized businesses. Do you find that, too? It's the execution part that's lacking?
Well, 10 years ago, a guy by the name of Ram Charan wrote a book called Execution. And the book is gives some advice, but it's mostly just waking people up to the fact that, look, it's execution, stupid.
Okay.
your MBAs or all your business school training. I mean, pick up the Duke MBA curriculum, you know, and try and find more than one class that has anything to do with execution. We are so lopsided in terms of our business education.
Right.
10 years ago, we set out to say, let's go to work on this. And I'll tell you, one of the things we found is that the kind of execution that requires a stroke of the pen is one thing. The kind of execution that requires a change in human behavior, that's something else. And that's the side of the equation where execution is really in demand, when it requires commitment from people. And that's really where we went to work, is the behavioral-based side. We say it this way. It doesn't take a leader very long to realize that the thing that's standing between them and the results they desperately want are the behavior of other people.
Hmm. So, Chris, you mentioned a book called Execution. There's one that I've been reading for the last year. It's called Execution, The Discipline of Getting Things Done by Larry Bossidy and Ram Charan. I don't know if that's the same person you mentioned.
That's exactly the one I'm referring to. Yes, sir.
That is just really great because, you know, so many times, you know, the CEO or the head guy in the organization thinks his strategy is just so great and so wonderful. Now he can just sit back and it's just going to happen. And, you know, they really talk about how you need to be in touch with that the strategy is actually being executed with. And you got to. It almost seems like you have to be kind of suspicious, and you need to be assuming that things are going to go off course all the time, and you need to put them back on the course.
Yeah, the way we say it is that execution is the one thing you do not delegate.
I like that.
But then you gotta trade that off with micromanaging and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. So what we're looking at with the four disciplines, what a leader does isn't mind control. It's not about getting people to do things the way you want them to do them. That's micromanagement. Mm-hmm. What it is it's helping each team create a winnable game that they're engaged in. the commitments, the individual specific weekly commitments they make are all theirs. This is not a compliance methodology. It's a commitment methodology. But there are rules, you know, just like there are rules for flight, you know, lift, thrust, weight, drag. There are rules for engaging a workforce around a critical goal. And the rules are focus, leverage, engagement, and accountability. And the four disciplines is a 10-year study in how to apply those rules in a way so that you can, you know, you can execute a strategy that requires people doing things differently.
So what you're saying is it's built into this concept of the four disciplines is into its fabric is a way to change and have behavior modification. It appears through engaging more, becoming more aware, and really tapping into your potential.
Absolutely. We were blown away at the amount of untapped human potential that exists in even well-run organizations. We have been amazed. You know, you've got the state of Georgia, the human services side of the state of Georgia responsible for the welfare. We saw a 60% decrease in repeat cases of child maltreatment across the entire state of Georgia over an 18-month period of time. I mean, we've seen extraordinary things done with this methodology. It wasn't that we did it. We didn't do it. We know we didn't do anything with it. But in the hands of the right leader, this is a very powerful process for engaging the hearts and minds of people towards very specific outcomes.
Now, you know, I mentioned before so many times, you know, and I've been saying on the show, you know, you need to face when you need to change your results, you need to change your thoughts and behaviors, and you're going to face some discomfort. And when you face discomfort, that's actually a good thing because that says that you're on the right track. But is that something you see in this through this whole 4DX process?
Yeah, well, at the highest level, I'll give you four of them right now. When you follow discipline one and you narrow the focus, you have to say no to good ideas. And we hate that. There's an enormous amount of cognitive dissonance associated with saying no to good ideas.
Uh-huh.
Right? Our brain is totally wired. That's good idea means we're doing it. Good idea means we should do it. And we say, no, there will always be more good ideas than there is capacity to execute. You've got to say no to good ideas. So there's pain there. And then with leading indicators versus lagging indicators, human beings love lag indicators because they're really important. It's a results measure, and the data's easy to come by, right? I just get on my scale, and there's the data.
Mm-hmm.
Leading indicators like diet and exercise, those are hard to come by, but that's where all the leverage is, right? Nobody likes tracking how many calories they've eaten or how many calories they've burned. That's painful. And scoreboards, we teach people how to make players' scoreboards rather than coaches' scoreboards. Every organization likes creating coaches' scoreboards. And we give them a formula, and it's counterintuitive for how to create a player's scoreboard like you see at an athletic event. And discipline four is counterintuitive because the person has to make the commitment. The leader cannot micromanage what the commitment is. And so all of these disciplines, you're fighting human nature. But the beautiful irony was this. If you can get it going, game theory sort of swoops in. And when it's done right, it starts to feel like a game. And where you were fighting human nature in the first, what ends up happening is that it becomes very sticky and very engaging once it's done right. And that's
okay.
So there's a little bit of a little catch-22 in all of it.
So it's not like, oh, this is going to be all fun and, you know, we're not going to have any discomfort or pain in all this. You're going to face it, but this does it just kind of help mitigate the
Yeah, we're going to tell you, you're going to fight your own instincts. And as a matter of fact, the more intelligent and the more creative you are, the stronger those instincts are going to be. And you're going to have to fight your own instincts through all four of these disciplines. And as soon as we tell people, they go, yep, I do that. Yep, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
I do that too. But you know, it's one of those things where the first step is awareness. And once people have an awareness, they're able to sort of fight through. It's been a very interesting journey. And I love your focus on on behavioral modification. You know, we started this thinking it was all going to be about business practices. Mm-hmm. And what we ended up realizing was, no, the keys to execution are inside of basic natural human tendencies. It's the whole thing has to do with human nature far more than it does business processes.
You know, I totally agree. I mean, that's why I got personally in the neuro-linguistic programming in the late 80s, because I thought the first piece of consulting was not more information, because I would give a lot of people information, a lot of potential clients and current clients, and if they had a self-sabotage mechanism or a belief they could succeed, it didn't matter how much good information I gave them, they would find a way not to use it. And it was interesting. So integrating the mindset with business practices is wonderful. Now, what's interesting when you, the lag indicators and the lead indicators, and I totally agree with you, is that one of the things that people are fighting to move from lag to lead, or, you know, at least integrate the lead indicators, is the culture, because fighting the culture is big. Cultural beliefs of immediate gratification. How does this work out in your whole a scenario here?
Yeah, you've got to fight immediate gratification in a couple of places. The first place you have to fight it is, and by the way, these are called the four disciplines of execution. They're not the four good ideas of execution.
Okay.
Yes.
You're gonna fight immediate gratification on every single one of these fronts, and because it's a discipline. And the discipline of tracking lead measures. I don't want to track. You know, if I'm a contractor and I've got these great lead indicators that we've come up with around safety, you know, I'm too busy. I don't want to go track whether they're wearing their hard hats and their goggles and they're using braces and scaffolds. I got too much to do. The whirlwind's going to dominate, right? There has to be some discipline around even getting the data. So that's the first place we track instant gratification. The second place we track it is they want to see the leads move the lag right away the next day. And we're like, no, you got to give this. You got to stay on the lead usually for a couple of weeks before you see the lag measure move. And part of it's just setting expectations and making sure. And this is key. It's got to be a high stakes game. If it's not a high stakes game, they won't deal with the frustration necessary to get there. It's got to be a meaningful game.
That really makes sense. If we're going to take a quick break. Do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah, I'd love to stay on.
Yeah, because I think you have a flight to catch, don't you?
Yeah, I'm watching my clock.
But oh, good.
I've got at least another 10 before I've got to run.
Excellent. So we will take a quick break right now. We're speaking with the co-author of The Four Disciplines of Execution, Chris McChesney, and we'll be right back to continue this great, great discussion that's absolutely invaluable for business as well as life. We'll be right back.
Hopefully, you'll never have to experience a disaster such as a fire or a flood striking your home or business. But if you do, know there's someone out there who can quickly help you get life back to normal. That someone is ServiceMaster by Disaster Professionals. Just call 602-431-2222, and our professionals will be there to lend a hand. You can be confident knowing ServiceMaster Clean has over 50 years of experience restoring damaged homes and businesses after frightening events such as fires, floods, vandalisms, and other disasters. We can offer services such as emergency cleaning, smoke, soot, and odor removal, in addition to water and fire damage repair. Our solid reputation is the reason insurance companies nationwide know ServiceMaster Clean will get the job done quickly and professionally. Plus, we guarantee to do the work right the first time, or we'll do it over with no questions asked. That's ServiceMaster Clean. We're the company that's first to respond to your call, first to arrive on the scene, and first to guarantee relief. Because delays and hassles are the last thing you need. Remember, 602-431-2222 for ServiceMaster Clean by Disaster Professionals. And get the clean you expect and the service you deserve.
Hey, And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac alongside Mike Kaufman. And this is Breaking Murphy's Law, first Monday and Tuesday from 2 to 3. And we're really honored to have the co-author of The Four Disciplines of Execution, Chris McChesney, talking about some really invaluable stuff. If you're in business, this is a must read. There's no question. And we'll give you more contact information in just a little while. Back to you, Mike.
Okay. Well, Chris, you know, I have a couple things I want to ask you about, and I'll kind of give you a little background. I mean, as you're aware, ServiceMaster is going through the process of implementing 40X throughout the corporation and throughout the franchises, and our CEO, Hank Mullaney, he's a pretty impatient kind of guy, and he made that very clear to us at the outset.
Right.
But I also get the impression that he's a pretty disciplined kind of guy. Yep. So otherwise they would have said, I think they would have said, you better have a wig board up in a week and better get moving. So I kind of want to talk about the idea of, you know, what's a reasonable kind of timeline for this, especially in ServiceMaster is a huge corporation, and you're moving you're moving an oil tanker, you know, with that. But I'm a smaller business, and I should be able to act quicker or whatever, but still, you can't expect things immediately. But the other comment I want to make before I ask you to answer that is, it's important to feel like you're winning, and you said that you want to have that scoreboard and people feel like they feel they're winning the game. But I think somewhere along the way, you got to make everyone believe that they can win the game.
Yeah. Boy, you hit that right on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to finish that thought, or was that the question?
Yeah. That was the question. Is that really is that what you see? And is there challenges with that you see? It's not something that just takes care of itself.
We ask leaders a lot of hard questions. I think maybe the hardest question we ask leaders is, are your people playing a winnable game? And do your people believe they're playing a winnable game?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very good lens for looking. If you're in the process of implementing the four disciplines as a way to execute your strategy, this is the question you have to keep asking yourself. Do they believe this is a winnable game? You remember when we talked about good lead indicators? If the lead indicator can be influenced by the team, if it's influenceable, and if it's predictive, meaning the lead measure will move the lag measure, right? That's the foundation of a winnable game right there.
Mm-hmm.
They're pulling on a lever that will really move the outcome. And so much of the process is then built around that. But this idea of, are we, you know, does the team feel they're playing a winnable game is a very big idea. And when we see it, when they do, the morale, the engagement, the intensity, everything follows. And when they don't, it's like letting all the air out. And it's like pushing a rope. Nothing happens. Hmm. And you know, to your other question about timing, we would tell you, if you read this book and you've got organizational responsibilities, we would say that you should ask yourself an initial question. And the initial question is, do I like the 4DX? Do I like four disciplines as a good thinking methodology, right? Do I like it as a good, you know, it's good stuff. I add it to my leadership vocabulary. Or do I want to use this as an operating system for really executing my strategy? Now, the answer is going to take you in two very different places, but that's where we start with clients. We always say, well, is it this or is it this? And, you know, Hank Mullaney, you bring up as the CEO of ServiceMaster. I mean, this is an extraordinary leader. He first came across the four disciplines. He and I met when he was at Walmart. And he ran one of the biggest regions at Walmart and basically took that region from last place to first place. So by the time he showed up at ServiceMaster, he had a very good understanding of what was possible with this methodology. But you'll remember, he didn't mandate it. He sort of let his leaders take a look at it, make their own conclusion, and sort of come to the table on their own.
Hmm. Okay. Wow. I didn't realize that part of it. Hmm.
Yeah. And he's very outspoken about what he had done at Walmart. And then he told us, he said, you know, to Franklin Covey, he said, look, you've got to make this sale. I'm not going to force this. And he wanted to see his division presidents buy into this. He's a very sharp, very personable leader. And then, you know, as we got started, the first thing we always do, and you're right, it's a lot to bite off, but the first thing we do is we spend a day on the wildly important goals. What's the big wildly important goal? Sometimes we call it the war. What are the fewest number of battles, or, you know, that have to be won to win the war? And we do a lot of work at that level just to make sure, and back to what Dave said earlier, you know, just to make sure we're playing a winnable game, or excuse me, we're playing a high-stakes game. So it's got to be a winnable game, it's got to be a high-stakes game. And that's sort of the very first thing that we do. And then the second thing, once the target's right, once we're sure, okay, we like where we're going, we've got the war, we've got the fewest number of battles necessary to win the war, then we start working with frontline management. The managers 1 and 2 levels above away from the front line of the organization, and they're the ones that implement this. And we may not do the whole organization at once. We'll take it in pieces. But you know, what we found is getting the targeting right up front is huge, and then getting management involved, getting the team leads and the frontline managers involved is critical to this being done successfully.
Now, Chris, let me ask you this. When you said the fewest number of battles to win the war, I like that phrase. And this is what it reminded me of. And tell me if this is integrated into your concept or if it's outside your concept. Is when I hear that, the fewest number of battles to win the war, I think of two things. I think of internal structure, systems, and staff, and external type of threats and opportunities. And from an internal standpoint, I'm thinking, do you have the right players in place that are teachable and that can move up? Or do you have players that just don't get the high-stakes game, or they have belief or self-esteem issues that just won't go above their self-imposed limitations? Is that something that integrates well into what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely critical. Every one of these steps is a little bit of a leap of faith, and you know, you can't run faster. You can't run faster than you have strength. You know, it's that whole idea, and it really starts with people's heads. And so the way that we begin working with them is when they identify one thing that they're absolutely going to do, and we often use the space program as a beautiful metaphor for this. You know, when Kennedy said we're going to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade and return him safely home, that was this extraordinary. You know, think of that in early 1960s, right? That was incredible, and then impossible. Forget incredible; it felt impossible. But then they took one more step, and NASA identified the fewest number of battles necessary to win the war, and those were navigation, propulsion, and life support, right? Navigation, the moon's not standing still. It's like shooting a bullet with a bullet. Propulsion, they had to get that craft up to Mach 27. And life support, they had to keep a human being alive. And so now you took the impossible, now you broke it down into, you know, not 20, but just a few, three in this case, three, you know, almost impossible, but a little more feasible now, right? And this is literally how we do this work with organizations. You know, they'll identify one key aspect of the operation, and they'll give it a finish line. You know, in Kennedy's case, the finish line was December 31st, 1969. Got to be done by then. And lock down the accountability. And then, what are the fewest number of battles? Anybody can come up with 20 things we got to do. What are the fewest critical battles that we can put a disproportionate amount of energy against? And this is where we see organizations really have breakthrough results, okay, by putting a disproportionate amount of energy against leverage.
Wow, that just sounds very powerful. So, like with a corporation like ServiceMaster, I mean, that's a pretty big corporation. How long do you think once you've got the buy-in of all the leadership, what kind of implementation time frame schedule have you experienced?
Okay, great question. So, for instance, and just using ServiceMaster as an example, you know, the different parts of ServiceMaster have gone. You know, Mary Mates, ServiceMaster Clean, Terminex, True Green. Our account manager for ServiceMaster would be so proud of me if he just heard me rattle that off.
Yeah,
right?
Okay, wow.
Not bad, huh, gentlemen? So, you know, they all went, you know, based on different things that were happening. starting with their strategic planning and where they were at with their year, they all went at different times. And they started with a day with their executive teams to map out, okay, what's the war and what's the fewest number of battles? And then there's several weeks, anywhere from 3 to 4 weeks, of work that's done with the managers to get them certified. So there's just a few days, like 2 days offline. But there's some work that has to be done in preparation for that, and then there's some work they do when they leave to get it launched with their team. But what you'll see, and I think Terminex is the first one that's gotten all the way through the process right now, they have all of their teams now with live scoreboards, with lead measures that are aimed at the lag measures, all lining up to the fewest number of battles, pushing on the war. And every week, every member of those teams, they're making commitments to move those lead indicators. All right, in addition to everything I got to do this week, what are the one or two things I'm going to do to move the lead indicator? And that's how you maintain that organizational push, even in the midst of all of the distractions that are inevitable inside of an organization.
Yeah, measurement is so critical, because if you don't measure things, you don't know which way you're going. Let me ask you this from maybe a more global standpoint. Strategic planning, is this part of a strategic plan, or is this replace a strategic plan? How does this all integrate in with strategic planning?
You know, we used to wrestle a lot with strategic plan, and then we kind of got clear on it. One of the things that in the second chapter of the third section, there's a chapter called Focusing the Organization. And in there is a map we call the strategy map. And it shows that strategies can be broken into three components. One is the whirlwind, everything you have to do to maintain the operation, all the little health indicators. And you could put balanced scorecard right there, right? Your financial, yeah. Your operational, employee, and customer metrics right there, right? So we'll call that life support or whirlwind. Then there's another section called stroke of the pen. These are the critical chess moves that the organization is going to make this year in order to fulfill its strategy. And then there is behavioral change, all right? It's the behavioral change component that Four Disciplines is so good at. But it's the stroke of the pen that seems to be the most valuable aspect for strategic planning, because certain things have to precede other things. Where we find organizations make very real error is when they try and drive a behavioral-based strategy with a strategic plan. What ends up happening is it ends up sitting on the shelf gathering dust.
Hmm. So now, I've worked in pretty large corporations in the past, Motorola, Non-Semiconductor, and I'm kind of familiar with that whole corporate, you got many layers and many different divisions and all that within the corporation. Now I'm a small business owner, and that's kind of different kind of game. So I kind of suspect as a small business owner that I can make this happen a lot faster than someone than Hank Mulaney can in the corporation.
Right.
You think I'm right?
Yes, I know you're right.
So I think what I have to do, I got to be careful because, again, I have I've got a smaller organization. You know, we have a different set of kinds of people in it and stuff, but we have very committed people also. I just want to make sure that we are following the process in a good way, but I expect we should be able to get results faster too.
Yeah, there's a good news and bad news with the small business. The good news with the small business is just that, the size. And mm-hmm. by the way, we choose to view big businesses as just collections of small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we treat every big business as just this whole variety of small implementations that we're doing team by team.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole mindset, as you read the book, the whole methodology really revolves around a single team. How does this work inside of a single team?
Uh-huh.
But here's the problem: inside of small businesses, the temptation for distraction is actually worse than inside large organizations.
Hmm.
And the competition from the whirlwind is not less intense, it's more intense, because you have to do everything. I grew up in a family-run construction company. From the time I was 8 years old, I was told I was overhead. I You know,
oh,
we,
yeah.
Okay. we violated every child labor law anybody ever thought about. You know, I know what it's like to live in a small, literally live in a small business. And the distractions are incredible. So all of the warnings we give you in the book, don't just think, well, those are warnings for the big business. No, they're especially true for the small organization.
That is so incredible. Boy, you have a lot of great experience then, looking at both sides then.
I didn't think of it that way when I was 12 years old. I was on the job site for 14 hours. I didn't
see it. That is just incredible. Well, we're watching the clock for you, too, so I think you probably have a plane to catch.
Yeah, let me just do this one thing, if it's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we've got a website that's very interactive. There's a bunch of case study videos. You can download a chapter of the book or order the book. And it's got a lot of different things that you can look at. There's a free software application that you can learn to use. There's a bunch of tools. It's a great website. It's called 4DXbook.com. So the number 4DXbook.com. And, you know, please, if you've got questions, reach out. And Mike and Dave, you guys are about as fun. I've done a bunch of these radio interviews. You guys are a blast. I really enjoyed this.
Well, we enjoy you. And how, you know, one last question. How do you help other clients? Do you actually go out and still do consulting, workshops, seminars? Is that the case still for you?
Oh, yeah. So all over the country, there are these free sort of, you know, half-day overviews that you can get exposed to and kick the tires. And then if you like, what we do is we go back and work with the executive teams to work on their goals, and then we have a program called Manager Certification where we certify their managers to run this system, and we train coaches inside the organization to keep it alive.
Oh, I like that a lot. Do they go on 4DXbook.com for that, or is there a different contact?
Everything is right through that one website, everything they're looking for.
Wow.
You can look up events that are on there that are near your area, and just go ahead and sign in, and you put your email there. We'll be getting a hold of you.
So 4D as in Dave, xbook.com.
Yep.
And Chris McChesney, it's been a real honor and pleasure. I just love this stuff. I would love to have you on again, maybe even a longer period. Let me ask you this. Are you ever in Phoenix, Arizona?
I was just in Phoenix, Arizona, but it probably won't be too long. I think I'm back in Phoenix in January.
Okay,
anytime you want me on the show, just let us know.
Well, I appreciate it. And when you're here, we'll get you in the studio because this is really valuable stuff. I really appreciate you, Chris McChesney. That's 4DXbook.com. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks so much, gentlemen. Have a good day.
You too, Chris.
Wow. Well, let's take a quick break right now. He is awesome, I'll tell you now. This is exactly what businesses need. You and I have been talking about this, Mike, for a long time, whether it's breaking Murphy's Law integrated with neuro-linguistic programming. Change your mindset, change your behavior, get more discipline, learn to win the game, and is the game winnable? I just love this stuff. We're going to have him on again. We'll be right back.
In today's environment, short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy seem to be the norm and not the exception. These events can be devastating emotionally as well as financially. But just when you thought it was over, you might start to wonder about the tax consequences of short sales, foreclosures, and bankruptcy. Tax law can be very complex, and it would be critical to understand the tax laws surrounding your situation. Call Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor at 602-625-3074, 602-625-3074 to discuss your situation. He looks forward to talking with you.
Your body is the greatest gift that you will ever be given. How well are you taking care of yours? Hey everyone, this is Journey Reeves, owner of Mind Body Unlimited. More important than time or money, your health is the secret to a truly wealthy life. We can customize an exercise and diet program that greatly enhances your quality of life. If you are sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, give us a buzz at 480-370-7768. That's 480-370-7768 to schedule your free, no-obligation consultation today.
Are you standing at a crossroad in life wondering what's next? Is it time to reinvent your relationship, your career, your life? Whether you're ready for a reinvention revolution or reinvention evolution, the support of a couple of great coaches can get you there. When you decide it's time to take your life from just functional to optimal, call Joe and Lori Battaglia of Living the Dream Coaches, 888-505-5762. That's 888-505-5762, or go online to www.livingthedreamcoaches.com. That's www.livingthedreamcoaches.com.
I want to invite you to come to the Sawak for Autism Research. It is on Saturday, October 6th in the morning. Please come to the zoo and help raise money for autism treatments. I like the zoo walk because I like to walk around with my family and see animals. It is a lot of fun.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac alongside Mike Hoffman from Service Master by Disaster Professionals. Or did I reverse that?
What,
you I didn't reverse that.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, that was good. Disaster Professionals.
That's right.
And it's good because you never know when something could hit, then you better know Mike's number, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Well. It could be in the middle of the night and you go, I need a lifeboat in my living room. Mike, what's your number?
It's 602-431-2222. That's 602-431-2222.
I like it the other way how you said it.
No.
Rather than 2222. Try it again.
Okay. 602-431-2222.
And I was going to say, woo, woo, you know, like a tutu train.
Yeah, okay.
So that's why I had you say it. Right. 2222. It sounds okay. Like a tutu train.
Hmm. Yeah, right. I was just adding that 40xbook.com to my bookmarks on my as a web page. So
I would recommend this. We just had Chris McChesney on, of course, the New York Times best-selling author, co-author of The Four Disciplines of Execution. This is really valuable. The elite of the elite will do this stuff, and you don't have to be elite, but if you want to become elite, guess what? You better do this.
Yeah.
And it has all to do with the mindset. Change what you believe is possible. Look at certain beliefs that are disempowering. Look at ways to do things you haven't thought of. It's all about creativity, innovation, and also being able to work above your self-imposed limitations.
Mm-hmm. And believing that you can.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, it's, you know, I was... thinking about, there's another book I've been reading. It's called The Willpower Instinct, How Self-Control Works, Why It Matters, and What You Can Do About It. And actually, my doctor, Dr. Mangus, recommended that book to me.
Oh, neat.
And they talk about there's willpower involved with I will, I won't, and I want. All three of those require certain kind of discipline and willpower, and we'll talk about it sometime. But I just see, you know, and like what you were saying about, you know, your self-imposed limitations. What's the saying? Whether I believe I can or believe I can't, I will be correct.
Yeah, you'll be right, and that's the power of beliefs. It's just phenomenal. So, what we could encourage listeners right now to do, and it's simple, is discover your beliefs. They're hidden, they're unconscious, but look at where you place limits on yourself.
Right.
That's a belief.
Mm-hmm.
Look at patterns of your career or business, how much maybe sales you've made over the years, and see if it's about the same, net income, cash flow. Certain behavior patterns will translate into results. So if you're just sort of moving along about the same pace that you've always done, you'll get the same results, sometimes worse with this economy. Mm-hmm. What it takes is to start figuring out how to play above your self-imposed limitations, which means upgrade your skill sets. There's nothing better right now to do than to learn new ways of doing things, better ways, sophisticated way, be a master of something, masterful skill sets. Look at your beliefs, your identity. If you just think of yourself as a worker, you'll never be an entrepreneur.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, identity has a big thing. So what I do, I'll just give a hint. I seem to wear a lot of hats. You know me, Mike. Do I wear a lot of hats?
You wear many, many, many hats.
And you wear a lot of hats yourself.
I wear a lot of hats also.
So here, we're going to do some commentary on hats, which is identity. As a CPA, I have to be in identity as a CPA and also business CPA to go detail and also global.
Right.
As a radio host, I have to be an identity of a broadcaster to be able to interview people. In marketing or sales, I have to have the hat and the identity. And when I say identity, you have to take on the beliefs and the skill sets that all filters in of marketing or sales. And Mike, does that make sense to you? You wear the same number hats.
Well, you know, and I was thinking about that when Chris was talking about in a smaller business, how the whirlwind is more intense. And I think it is because in a small business, people wear different lot more hats.
Yeah.
You have it by definition, and you got to keep straight what hat you're wearing. And in a small business, you can have an organization chart where the same person is the general manager and they're the marketer and they're the customer service person. And, you know, that just, you got to keep those roles kind of straight with yourself.
And I would contend that in small business, I think you and Chris are absolutely right about the whirlwind. It's harder probably for small businesses. However, I would contend that people wear this, small business owners wear the same hat for different roles. And that's what I'm talking about. Unless they can flip their identity and change the hat, which automatically then will change how they think about a certain role, that will change their beliefs about a role, that will bring in a skill set of a different role. Just having the same hat but trying to do a different role, it won't work because you're bringing one skill set on, let's say, being a manager. And if you don't change the hat that filters in skill sets and beliefs, and you try to be a sales manager now versus the production manager, you're just bringing in the production manager viewpoint on sales. Good luck on that. That's not going to work. Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. Yes.
You got to change the hat and not just change the role. So you business owners out there, small business owners, mid-sized business owners, just because you multitask and just because you have different roles does not mean you're going to be really effective at everything. Either delegate. And, of course, small business owners may have trouble delegating because of the cost and trying to get additional resources. But you can learn to not just multitask, but multi-role by switching roles in mindset, in beliefs, activities, behaviors, and skill sets. And if you can't make the complete transformation from one identity to another, and you bring the same old identity, like we gave the example, production manager into the sales and marketing, or production manager trying to do accounting or whatever you do, it's not going to work very well because every certain skill set, every type of role has a certain way of achieving it with greatness. And if you want greatness, then you better switch your beliefs and make it consistent with that role, as well as the skill sets.
Is that just something? Is it just a matter of recognizing that I just put on a different hat? If I have a red hat and a green hat and a black hat, can I just change hats figuratively, or is there something more to it than that?
There's a little bit more to it. One is awareness. You're absolutely right, Mike. Is aware that you're switching hats, which means I'm moving to this role, and I specifically have 5 or 6 attributes of each role, what makes someone great in that role. So I just don't take the CPA hat and then switch it to a sales hat, but bringing in still the CPA mentality in the sales, that's just not going to work.
Right.
Or vice versa, my sales role in the CPA. So awareness, and then you list like 5 or 6 of the most important beliefs, skill sets in that role. And can you transform yourself? And what do you need to transform yourself? Upgrading skills, changing limiting beliefs. Because I'll tell you, CPAs especially are not very good usually. It's notorious for people skills or sales or networking. So trying to be a CPA and selling. Well, let's give you an example. One of the most popular CPA books out there in sales is, I hate sales book.
Okay,
I mean, just inherent in that title. It's like, mm-hmm. good luck on that.
Yeah, boy, let's talk about having a winning game there. Boy,
yeah.
Or a winnable game.
But it just buys into the belief that, mm-hmm. yeah, you hate it, but you got to do it. No, I say transform your identity.
Right.
And if you can't, then make sure you get someone that can.
Mm-hmm.
And just don't pretend you can do everything. Yeah, and not everyone can do everything, right?
Right. No.
But make sure if you're going to do most things as a small business owner, upgrade your skills, learn something about it, see if you can change beliefs. The stuck beliefs are unconscious beliefs that, well, I really don't like sales, but I'll go out. It will show up if you don't like sales and you're mm-hmm. networking. It will show that you don't like sales.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it will, uh-huh. So maybe you can learn to like sales, reframe
mm-hmm.
it.
Right.
To maybe uh-huh. just, what can I do to help this person?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the word sales either, so I reframed it to, hey, what can I do to help someone improve the quality of their life?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So change the role of the salesperson or your own personal definition of a salesperson.
Yeah, well, or
one that works yeah. for you.
Well, yeah, I think it's really you're identifying what makes a championship salesperson, marketing person, accounting person, production manager. And you have to identify their different beliefs, their different skill sets, their different uh-huh. identities. Once you can identify with that and become aware, you can step into that by bringing in and transforming some of your beliefs that work for CPA stuff. And it may not work for sales, but then with flexibility, you uh-huh. can, like a light switch, move from this role to another role to third role to fourth role.
Right.
But you have to also flip the switch that's consistent with that role in terms of skills and beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
You don't bring your production manager role into sales.
No.
I mean, it just
right.
doesn't work.
Right, right.
But and that's something learnable. And mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's in this book or not. I bet it probably is. But I think there's a lot of books out there. There's neuro-linguistic programming that can teach you that. There's a lot of ways to learn to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The thing is, a lot of people think it's too difficult.
Hmm. So are we kind of winding down here, David? Are we running out of time?
I can't believe it. This deserves a second hour.
Hey, well, we'll be here tomorrow.
Oh, so. That's right. We could.
Right.
Well, you have another guest tomorrow.
You have a great guest. He's a State Farm agent. His name is Dennis Dowling, and it'll be really fun to talk to.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah, it's always good to have people share their viewpoints. And as you hear about different viewpoints like Chris McChesney, then you say, hey, that's something I haven't thought of. Maybe I should implement that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of struggling businesses out there. Why struggle? Why
right.
not do what the great firms do
mm-hmm.
and get out of the struggle?
Right, right. And it's so easy. I think many times there's a simple answer. It's not easy finding that simple answer, though.
No, but the answer is usually within oneself. I think people look outside themselves for the solution and the answer. They'll
mm-hmm.
never find it that way.
Uh-huh.
They can get hints, but until you transform yourself, until you break out of limiting beliefs and say, hey, anything and everything is possible, I just haven't found it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's the three levels of thinking. Maybe we'll have some time to do that tomorrow. In fact, maybe we'll talk about the three levels of thinking. But once you transform your own self, that's when things happen. Otherwise, you can struggle, tie into the economy, or be sort of the rebel in terms of saying, wait, I can do something different, not tie into the cultural beliefs, and create ways of helping people in magnificent ways, and as I grow to my full potential.
Hmm. Wow. Boy, you've got me interested.
Yeah, I'm even interested now. No, I was always interested, but I really like it. Mike, this is great. Thank you. How do they get in touch with you again?
Okay, you can call us at 602-431-2222.
And that's Service Master by Disaster Professionals. Definitely take Mike's number because, believe me, you just never know. You come home and you go, uh-oh, what's the water doing?
Yeah.
Upstairs, gravity goes downward. I'll be rained on. Call Mike at
602-431-2222.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. Thanks for getting that great guest, Chris McChesney, by the way. Very, very good. We'll see everyone tomorrow, 2 to 3, for another episode of Breaking Murphy's Law. Have a good night.
Have a good night.